Welcome to Talking in Stations, a podcast about EVE Online. I am your host, Matterall. Today, this show is sponsored by EVE Mogul. EVE Mogul is an organization whose mission is to supply New Eden Capsuleers with services to increase their wallets. EVE Mogul offer both in-game and out-of-game services, such as rigged sortios, high-sec moon mining, trade hubs, market and industry tools, loyalty point store, and a supportive community. Visit evetechmogul.com to learn more and to get on their Discord. That's EVE Mogul at eve-mogul.com. All right, guys, welcome to the show. How are you doing, Elise?
I'm doing good. That was a really invigorating introductory segment.
Yeah. We appreciate sponsorship. And if you are interested in sponsoring a show and it goes out to these days, we get about 3,200 to sometimes, depending on the show, like this one will get a lot of listens, 5,000-6,000 people listening. If you want to be sponsored, then, or you want to sponsor this show, then let me know. Thanks. Today, we are going to talk about NullSec War, and particularly in the South, between Legacy Coalition and Winter Coalition. And I think it's still primarily between Fraternity, which is the head of Winter, and Test, which is the head of Legacy. So we will check that out with fleet commanders who are on the field and fighting every day. But first, I want to say hello to Ron, who's sitting in for Carneros. How's it going, Ron?
I'm doing good. I really liked, the tack. It sounds very Eevee when you were setting.
Yeah, I had to change that. I gave the layman dash and then I did the tack because, yeah, you gotta know our market, right? We're very happy to have a couple of FCs. We're going to introduce you in a second. Later on, he's not here yet because he's racing home. We're going to get the leader of Fraternity, Noros, will be on. But first, I'd like to introduce one of Noros' commanders in Fraternity, Elo Knight. How are you?
Hey, what's going on? I'm pretty good.
Awesome. Thanks for coming. And on the other side of the table, we have from Test, Pro God Legend.
Hey, what's up?
All right, guys. So let's talk about your area. Ron, actually, can you set this up and tell us like what area this is and what's been going on?
Yeah, so this is mainly, all around Amincia and Deterid. There's sort of that kind of line, right? And you can see it on the coalition map where, Test is to the south and then Fraternity is to the north. And it's all the skirmishes and the structures around there have been, a form of constant fighting. Yeah, so, on there it's Legacy and then Winter Coalition to the north.
So this has been a hotbed of activity, but it's been kind of slow or maybe secret. We don't know. It's been building up over time. ProGod, why don't you guys, and Elo, why don't you guys tell us what's going on there and some of the battles that you guys have been seeing?
I don't think there's too much going on these days lately. So I would say about 3 or 4 weeks ago, six or seven weeks ago, the nip between our groups officially ended. And when you've got entities as large as Winter Coalition and Legacy living next to each other with no agreements in place and nothing to stop us from shooting each other and going after structures for fights, eventually that's going to escalate very quickly. And so as the nip was ending, Fraternity and all them kept bringing in more allies, getting ready for the nip to be over, and we did our own preparations getting ready for the nip to be over. And I think the nip was over for 2 weeks before we just said, fuck it, let's go ahead and let our members know that this is pretty much a war.
Mm-hmm. By the way, nip is a non-invasion pact. Go ahead.
So, I think both sides let their members know that it's just going to be a pretty brutal, pretty tough conflict for a long time. Or at least it looked like that at the time. We opened up with some pretty heavy attacks the first couple of weeks. We went after some pretty big I-hubs, and then we immediately ran into the Sino-Jammer wall. And, I would say that I've been running wars in this game for a long, long, long time. And, the more you do it, the more you get a feel for how things are going to go. So after our first couple of weeks and we realized what we would have to do to get through the new Sinojammer mechanics, we definitely scaled back our expectations with our members, and it's been a lot of border skirmishes on both sides. I mean, no one's really lost any strategic objectives on either side. It's just been a lot of fleet fighting for a while, and even that's starting to scale down a little bit. I mean, for the most part, you know, both sides kind of knew what they were getting themselves into, but I don't think anyone, even though everyone kind of said the Sinojammers were what they were when they came out, I don't think this is, to my knowledge, is the first real offensive conflict or big conflict under the new Sinojammer mechanics. And I don't think anyone, even the most skeptical people, realize it would be this oppressive. So I don't think anyone's going to make any progress on either side, not just in this war, but for any war really for a while.
I want to just say that Naros has joined us now. How are you doing, Naros? Are you able to hear us?
Hi, you can hear me. Thank you.
Great. Yeah. Welcome to the show. All right. We just started talking about your area and what's been going on there recently. So,
okay.
Yeah. So,
I just waiting and hearing Proga talking about the pre-NIP thingy.
Yeah.
That's why I love Proga. Like, we can keep going on talking about this hours and hours and never get tired of it.
I assume that you have a point of view about it.
Well, pretty much the same, except for which one is defending their space and which one is doing the initial preparation. There was never a real invasion against legacy space. Like, ever since last year, okay, there was one, but I failed miserably.
I don't think it's up for debate that we're attacking you at the moment.
I mean, before the NIP, for that.
So, okay, let's be clear. So, definitely right now, the incursions are coming from Legacy Coalition into Fraternity space, so that the attack is coming from Test to Fraternity. But Test says that you guys violated a non-invasion pact.
Well, so the actual break of the NIP was the NIP had 6 days left on it anyway, and at that point, both sides were kind of nipping at each other's heels, knowing that the NIP was about to end. And you know, one of the fleets in Fraternity Coalition did something with an Astra House, and Legacy basically said this NIP is meaningless. You know, with 6 days left to go, we're basically breaking it every day already. Let's just go ahead and end it. So I would say that was mostly, and you know, this is stated at the time, that was mostly just a formal recognition of what was pretty much already happening.
Now, but it wasn't happening directly. It seemed like you guys were allowing Red Alliance to camp near the area, to be in the area, and Fraternity was allowing Skill U to be in the area. So when those guys would attack or skirmish, it wasn't necessarily breaking the NIP.
In both of those situations, yeah, we had, you know, discussed behind the doors, you know, that basic, you know, what was happening. So there was understandings on both sides for both of those situations.
Okay. Suffice to say, there are this is not a friendly war for entertainment. You guys are you guys want to dissemble the other one.
It's not true from my side. No,
it's not.
I mean, it is mostly content wise for now, and I don't think Proga wants to dismantle us, right?
Oh, well, we said when we did the announcement is that we felt, based on how the war against us last year started, you know, with PL and everyone coming down through Fraternity space and invading us the way they did last year, based on all the movements we saw, we felt there was a threat of that again. So, you know, we committed the war. We declared the war with the idea of removing the threat. Now, that could be a lot of different things. But, yeah, I mean, we went to war with a plan to take some space and to kill some structures and push you guys back. Now, as far as whether we'll be able to do that under the new Sinojammers, I don't know about that, but
that's one of the things that you're working against is the new mechanics for Sinojammers, you were saying.
So for people that haven't like had to deal with the war with the new Sinojammers, what makes them so much more different than the old Sinojammer? The old Sinojammer being like this module that you could put on a POS and kind of defang with bombers if you wanted to.
Yeah, so this mechanic is, and I was at Vegas when they announced it, and I went structures roundtable and basically laid this shit out, and it's frustrating to see it actually play out exactly as a lot of people in that room thought it would. But the old Sinojammer mechanic was a structure, a paw structure that had no resistances and could be repped and also had no damage cap. I think it had 11 million EHP, if I remember correctly. It might have either had 16 or 11.
Yeah, 16.
But it had no resistances, which is a key factor, and there was no damage cap. It took 30 minutes to online and 30 minutes to anchor, and you could only have one anchored at a time in the system. And it's important to remember that even under the old mechanics, Sinojammers were really strong. In the Northern War, when goons were going after GOTG and CO2 space, they were having a lot of trouble dealing with the old Sinojammers. And those are relatively easy to kill. There's been plenty of times in the past where logging off 20 dreads on a Sinojammer basically allowed you to insta-pop it. You know, if you can get it, especially now that capitals can jump gates, it's really not that hard to down the old Sinojammers. The new Sinojammers are entirely different. They have a 5,000 DPS damage cap. And when you take the damage cap into account, when they're online, they take 27 minutes to incap. And there's nothing you can do to accelerate that time. It's just like any other Citadel. You have to spend 27 minutes shooting it. And there can be three anchored in a system at a time. When they're not online, they're actually pretty easy to kill and pretty quick to kill, which, you know, sounds like a good thing, but it actually ends up working against the attackers for reasons I'll get into in a second. But because they're citadels and you don't need to feel the towers and they're not very hard to defend and they take so long to kill, it's trivial to basically Sinojam an entire region. So there would be situations early in the war where, and keep in mind, Fraternity has Chinese time zone timers. So if you want to form 3-4 hours before a Chinese time zone timer, you're forming at like 0700 or 0600. So we would wake up basically for a timer in West Iteroid and go out and find that there were 35, 40 systems that were Sinojammed. And to down any one of these Sinojammers, you'd have to spend 27 minutes shooting it, no matter how large your fleet was. And, you know, capitals can move gates now, and you can have jump gates go anywhere pretty much pretty quickly. And regular capital ships can take jump gates as well. So it became pretty obvious pretty clearly that it's extremely easy for the defenders to maneuver under their Sinojam space. And, I mean, we couldn't even Titan Bridge. We were basically forming up in our staging systems and then leaving by gate to go into their space like it was 2004 or something. And so we tried some different things. It's the first weekend we tried to jammer lock them, which was one of the strategies that people had talked about, that because anybody can own a Sinojammer in a system, that if you as the attackers anchored three Sinojammers, then the defenders couldn't anchor a Sinojammer. So we at one point had, for an entire constellation, 18 Sinojammers down, three in each of the six systems. And it got to a point to where we realized that if you were going to actually try to pull that strategy off, you'd have to essentially hell camp them. Because, you know, we did this about 8 to 10 hours before the actual timer would have come out. And of course, they're forming and we're fighting for hours. But you can't, unless you online the jammer and then reinforce it, the jammer's going to stay in low power. And when it's in low power, it only takes 8 to 9 minutes to kill. It's no time at all. So you've got a bunch of jammers spread out over a bunch of different places. And, you know, it only takes 8 to 9 minutes to kill it. And if they kill it, they get to anchor their own and online it. So you've got to basically cover this entire system for the entire time that you want to jammer lock it. So, you know, if you want to do this 6 to 8 hours before, then you've got to cover a system for 6 to 8 hours. if you want to do it 3 to 4 hours before, then you got to cover a system for 3 to 4 hours. But of course, you know, just to get into the system, you got to go by gate because every system is sino-jammed constantly all the time around the clock. So it got to the situation where we looked at how it would look to take down some sino jammers and to take down some system with sino jammers. And we're like, we're going to have to put in, you know, 6 to 8 hour ops over an entire weekend just to down, you know, a peripheral iHub if we want to do that. And then, you know, once you get your own iHub up, assuming you want to go after iHubs, which in my case, in my logic, I think you want to prefer iHubs over Citadels, they still have all the other iHubs and all the other systems in the constellation. So once your iHub is up and you have to start defending it, you're under their jammers for your own defensive op. And if you're trying to get Citadels down, you're under their jammers as too. So it creates a situation where you're trying to put in what was usually end of the war effort. You know, when it came time to Hell Camp back in the old days, run 6, 8, 10 hour ops, that was usually the end of the war. That was when you were Hell Camping the enemy staging or having a big giant super battle. These days, under these new jammers, you're going to have to put in that effort from day one just to make any progress at all. And I don't think that's doable. I mean, there was a situation where we were setting up for a fight in late USTZ, early AUTZ, and we sent out a fleet 3 hours before the op to mess with the jammer, and we shot it for uncontested for 15 minutes, and then Fraternity pinged, and you know we ended up being pushed off the jammer with a couple minutes left. But I mean, the fact that you could sit there and shoot a jammer for 15 minutes uncontested and not make any progress because it takes 27 minutes to kill, no matter what you do, it is definitely a change in the meta. I mean, that's just, it's such a monumental change to the way wars used to be fought that it's going to take people a while to adjust. So the way wars used to be fought, unless they change the sino jammer mechanics, I think that's going to go out the window pretty quickly.
Wow.
I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on it because you're an old guard guy, so.
I mean, I'm not sure. I haven't had to deal with it the way you the picture you paint seems quite grim. But you know, the whole I do like the concept that the way wars used to be fought is no longer viable because you have to come up with new strategies and stuff. But it does seem a bit grim. And also, like EVE players and EVE groups have gotten so good at responding to invasions and stuff like that. The Defender has such a massive advantage. And you were saying, like, Fraternity pinged and formed a fleet big enough to push you off of a jammer in 15 minutes, which is something that wouldn't have happened 5 years ago. Like, a Defender would be too sluggish. It would take them too much time. And that's why the medium-scale alliances would have so much success, because they would be, like, faster, more nimble, being able to dart in and out. But when that's not the case, then, you know, the whole dynamic changes.
Yeah. And, you know, as far as like pushing us off the jammer, like the difference, it's the combination of structures as well. So, I mean, like we have a fleet there and we're 7 jumps deep into their jammer net, basically. And so any reinforcements we have to bring in have to go through 7 jumps, getting waterboarded the whole time, dictors in front of them, et cetera. Meanwhile, they've got a jump gate that goes next door. So they form a fleet and they're just streaming in more numbers through the jump gate the entire time. And, you know, if you take some time to set up your space, like you can have jump gates crisscrossing the whole thing, the entire thing sino jammed, capital spread out throughout all your fortizars, and you could put up a pretty strong wall. And especially with jump ranges the way they are and some regions not having NPC 00 sov, there are some regions in this game that you could make extremely defendable. Depending on who's attacking you and what vector they're taking, it's a new EVE for sure, and I'm not sure how long it's going to take us to adjust to this new meta. But
I would like to translate everything you just said, but it would take me like a half hour to explain it. So we'll have to do a second show where we just pause and then explain what ProGod is saying to people that don't know all the acronyms and jargon.
You know, that was kind of where I was going, which, you know, when you say Hell Camp or 68 Hours, how many people, you know, would that involve? And then the follow-up is to Elo, like, to Elo, has he had, you know, much interactions with defending this?
Yeah, I usually run most of the, or 80% of the defensive fleets for our timers before work and whatnot, or while I'm at work. But the jammers, the 27 minutes is an extremely long time. Like ProGod's saying, it was like 15 minutes. I think you were there for more like 20, because when I got there, it was like three bars left, right? It was almost dead. But the fact that whenever somebody forms a fleet, I can just go and shoot my own jammer and start the repair timer to countdown.
So, oh, yeah, I didn't even mention that. Yeah.
So whenever these guys get to the jammer, right, whenever they actually make it the seven jumps or space to the jammer they want to shoot, it's got 4 minutes left on the repair cycle. So they have to either wait 4 minutes before they shoot it again, or they have to shoot it, and then when I save it, it's only 4 minutes to rep it back to full, right? I just have to go shoot it with my own fort and then let it start repping.
You don't even have to shoot it with, like, a fleet. You can just use it.
So whenever they form anything, I just fly around and shoot all the jammers and all the jump bridges and just wait.
And you guys get to take jump bridges through your space without having to accumulate any fatigue, right?
That's very nice. That's very advantageous, especially in somewhere like West Deterid, where it's just a big maze, basically, right? You can skip 13 jumps with one bridge and just camp them in.
Yeah, so, I mean, it gets to the point to where sending any fleet under the jammer umbrella basically is extremely risky, because you have to take it, you know, and then you have to find a way out at some point, and you can't get reinforcements there because you can't Titan Bridge reinforcements in either. I think, like, there was a situation early in the war where we got a fleet trapped and we sat there trying to shoot the jammer for a while just so we could eventually bridge in reinforcements if we did have to fight. And we're just sitting there for 30 minutes doing this shit. Like, it is just unreal how long it takes to deal with these things.
Yeah. I don't know why it's not the same for a bunch of the other upwell structures, the same as, like, jump bridges and everything else, but it's quite a long time for the jammers. But they are very vulnerable when they're offline, right? So there is the little trade-off.
Yeah.
And they're expensive.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be honest, too, for that. Like, the audience hasn't been very fair to you. One has actually to be in this war, you understand the problem with this jammer mechanic. And on pair with the ANSA back network we have, which we can move our fleets without fatigue at all, or we can just manually offline our own jammer and bridge ahead of you, it's all very broken.
Yeah, that's the other thing we haven't mentioned, is that you instantly offline the jammer and it only takes 5 minutes to put back online. I don't know, Elo, you said you saw it not scale with tie-dye the other day. I know CCP came out and said they were supposed to scale with tie-dye, but apparently it doesn't.
Not when I was watching it.
So you can turn them on and off to get your guys through, but before it used to take 30 minutes, right? You have to have 30 minutes.
Now it takes fucking five.
Yeah, and you can't. It's like, what, 5,000 DPS damage cap? So you could put a dread on all the jammers and stuff, but then the Fortizar can just kill a dread pretty easily, or the fleets can. It's very risky. You have to put a lot of man hours into actually breaking through them.
Well, and
fight, we fought for, what, like 4 or 6 hours or something before that timer?
No,
like, you were literally falling asleep at your desk, and I was, like, getting tired, and we had a timer in 4 hours, and we were still fighting over the jammers.
Oh, yeah. So, like, that was early on. And, like, we were actually talking on our side in the FC group, in the FC channel. And we had come to the realization that if we wanted to actually lock you out of the jammers, we were going to have to turn it into an all-night, like, fleet. We were going to have to stay formed until the timer came out, which was, like, 4 to 6 hours away. And I made the call on the FC channel. I was like, this is the third day of the war. There's no way we're running a 14-hour fleet on the third day of the war for one iHub. So we stood down. And, like, that turned out to be the most, like, the best shot we ever had at killing an iHub, was the one time that we decided to stand down on day three. And, like, I didn't realize at the time that would be, like, that's what you had to do. At the time, it seemed like the right call. I was like, why would we stay up for 13 hours for one iHub? Like, that's not how you pace a war.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I wouldn't want to stay up for 13 hours on, like, the first op, which has, like, a chance to fail, too. Yeah. That's a good way to make sure that nobody wants to join your campaign ever again.
pretty much.
Can we talk about that a little bit? That's no way to start a war. What is the right way to start a war? Like, how do you build momentum and morale?
You just get dunk after dunk after dunk.
Yeah.
And then you eagles. Just have some good fights. You don't need to necessarily take an objective. The way I would want to do it, and it varies from person to person. Like, Elo's got his style, Pro got his style. I'd want to find a system that has either a tactical victory, or like a possibility for a tactical victory, or a possibility for a fleet victory. And so either way, you're going to win one thing. You're either going to dunk the enemy fleet while they save a shitty objective that you didn't want anyways, or you're going to take an objective and be like, ha, we got the objective. You guys suck. And then so you just get a win, and then you just get like two or three of them together, and then go out and just slam dunk.
I've always told people that if you're actually going to be in like a campaign or a war that's different from what you usually do, I always like to start it out with a big battle if possible, to kind of signal to the pilots that it's a diff type of content that we're getting ourselves into. Cause you know, usually you're forming fleets, you know, daily or every other day, and you're getting in fights all the time, whether you're in a war or not. But if you're going to come out there and tell your guys like, hey, we're going to war, hey, we're going on deployment, I always plan out like a big, usually we'll have like an alliance meeting or some big soda, and then we'll get everyone in fleet. And I always try and plan out a big giant battle that, kind of shows everyone like, oh shit, he wasn't kidding. This is going to be the real deal for the next few weeks kind of thing. I mean, like, that's how we did it on this one. When we actually declared war, we fought basically all day, every day around the clock for the weekend. And then we ended up with that big battle on Sunday with 2,500, 3,000 people in it, where my nightmares got stuck in the jump tunnel of the gate, which is debatable whether that's my fault or not. I'm not going to claim any fault. And then we got bombed. But, yeah.
Yeah, it was unfortunate.
Elo, do you have, you're a different kind of fighter in this game. You and your Munins and usually rapid attacks and stuff like that. But do you have to, when you're doing a campaign, if you even do campaigns, like, do you have to worry about the same things, like planning out what's, you know, the planning out the building of morale or that sort of thing?
Yeah, momentum is the main thing in anything. Nobody's ever going to run out of money. They're going to run out of people logging into the fleets, right? So it's a big concern for us. So we've been focusing on more skirmishing rather than the big fights unless we have to. And since there's no more timers being made with Entosis, then we've just been fighting, you know, the B and C tier FCs. Mostly, as you've seen in the battle reports.
So then here comes psychological warfare and decisive victories and stuff like that. And then is that what you use, tools that you use to like hurt your enemy kind of thing?
Well, just mobility basically and planning all the prep work that goes into, I think Progod said that last time he was on here. The prep work that goes on to defense and running a campaign is immense.
That stuff isn't very public. I don't think a lot of people know how much effort it
is. Yeah. So a couple of these weekends, I've FC'd for like, you know, 20 or 28 hours out of 48 hours, plus the prep work a couple of days before, getting everything memorized. There's a lot to go into it to make sure you can win or at least have a fair chance of winning. But no, it's all about morale, right? So if you do, you know, the 8-hour fleet that Progo is talking about, and then you happen to lose that still, that's going to hurt you a lot more than just coming back the next weekend and trying again, right?
Yeah.
And from an outsider's perspective, I guess quasi-outsider's perspective, like Elo's fleets are known for being just an unstoppable force. Like they'll just keep coming at you and keep coming at you and keep coming at you no matter what you do. It's like super annoying to try and fight because you can't beat him down. He'll just keep coming, finding something, finding the low-hanging fruit if he has to, and then just keep coming back relentless more day after day, until finally he gets a critical mass. And your dudes are just like, oh man, we've been fighting all this time and they still keep coming. Screw this, I'm going to go play some other game.
Yeah, it can be annoying. And I mean, sometimes we'll just form up, like for example, like my corp, and we'll just like go somewhere and just sit in the citadel and everyone goes to bed kind of thing, just to mess with people. Like There's a lot of things.
I've never understood your desire to just do stuff like that.
I mean, it's funny.
I know we talk about it all the time, but like, if there's one thing I dislike about the current meta, is I prefer the set piece battles where I can roll up 30 minutes before the timer and ping the fleet and just show up. And that kind of content seems to be going by the wayside.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, especially if you're on the offensive. On the defensive, you can kind of, as long as they don't go around and kill all your Anziplexes and all your jammers while you're sleeping, then you can just roll out of bed. A lot of the times I've been, like, you know, a lot of the times at like 5 or 6 a.m. on a workday, I'll roll out of bed, join the fleet, we'll fight, win or lose, and then I'll go to work, right? It's not like I stay up all night all the time, but there is so much that has to happen. Especially on the offensive side, it's 3 times as much, right?
Yeah.
So it's like breakfast.
Yeah.
You literally eat test for breakfast.
Well, no, I don't think that's true. Straight back and forth, especially in the EU time zone. It really depends on the time zone and who's on and who's not on from both sides, right?
Yeah, we were getting our ass kicked there. We did well the first week, and then we had a really bad weekend the second weekend. And then it's kind of stalemated for the most part. We're definitely taking more losses than we usually do. It's been a pretty rough effort trying to juggle being on offense and managing all the other stuff. I think that was one of our motivations for kind of ending the high sec stuff and, you know, focusing more on a lesser fronts. So, you know, it's not been great. I mean, obviously it's pretty much stalemated. So we've won some fights. We've lost more fights than I would like to see, but
that's how you got to train new blood though, too, right? Like the people that have lost the fights aren't like, it's not like you and Billy are losing the fights. You guys are winning the majority of your fights. It's the people, you know, that are training on both sides that are losing, right?
Yeah,
because you know, me and you know when not to engage usually. Whereas someone
just check my E time zone.
Someone will just white knuckle and warp 3-8 and feed when you know one of us isn't looking or something.
Yeah. No, I was actually before I even jumped on, I was dealing with that. So another one from last night. So.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
So, I guess one of the things that happened a while ago was that Vili announced that there was. You know, big things were going to happen. This is right around when the NIP was being discarded. And then it kind of went silent for a while. And we didn't know this at the time, but Vili and Brogod and Tess were putting down a chain of keep stars along the border called, what was it called? The moving
walking,
wall.
Walking wall. Walking.
The walking wall.
Well, yeah, no, that was actually intended to go elsewhere. We only started putting a couple keep stars on the fraternity border down. And this is where Norris and I disagreed for a while. I don't think it really matters at this point, as far as who escalated first, but, the Brinkmanship escalated really quickly as far as, you know, they blew some allies and we were like, shit, they're bringing these people down. We got to escalate. And then they escalated and we escalated. And then we eventually ended up at war. But, as far as the walking wall and the keep star stuff, that there was other plans as well, but we are where we are right now.
But all those keep stars did get installed, and they're all one jump.
Some of the keep stars got installed.
Okay, but there is a chain that all connects. So one, you know, they're one.
No,
jump
I mean we put a couple keep stars down in Southern Faith. In Southern Teniferous to kind of round out. Our defenses there. In the last war, in the Southern War, one of our biggest issues is that once a fleet got through T2V into Faith Abalus, we couldn't really connect to it and cut them off. So that's why test stages at 08 TAC, because it has direct bridge range to T2, and that's why we keep star on T2 now, so we can jump supers back and forth there. It's we put down a couple of other strategic keep stars. We put one down in Oshit, which is that curse system that connects, which is more where we would like to be, but you know, I think we put down 3 or 4 keep stars just rounding it out. A couple of them were legacy keep stars, just their own home keep stars. It was about 5 at the time, and about 3 or 4 were test, and then a couple of legacy.
I see. So you're staging out of 08 TAC, that is Immensia, and Fraternity is staging out of 03 TAC 4. Is that correct, Norris?
Yeah, it's.
Yeah, two stagings, but yeah,
one and for Detroit.
People. We have one for Chinese people and one for English people.
It's actually pretty interesting because I would say both Test and Fraternity have, as far as the geography of looking at each other, we've got two really good home regions. East Deter, with the way the current mechanics work with the jump fatigue and low jump ranges, East Deterroid is an excellent region to live in. And of course, Esoteria benefits from being pretty isolated as well. So it's two really tough regions to attack.
Yeah, I love Esoteria for some reason. I don't know why. I think it was my first region that got burned down when I joined NC. Yeah, so where does ELO stage, though?
We stage in O3 partially, and then QRFJ partially. Depends on the time zone, right? So if you're forming in Chinese time zone, we form in a different system than the North American time zones, right?
It was a little different. It's a jump gate connects the two systems.
It's like one jump away with the jump gate, yeah. But it's just a massive different jump range, right?
Yeah.
So it's a small detail. But no, we're basically staged almost in range of each other, except that we have jammers online and they don't have jammers online, right? So we can bridge.
Yeah, we haven't really bothered with the jammers yet. I mean, it's something we could do when we feel the need to. It's
If you have capital advantage though in your home region, there's no reason to jam it, right? The reason we have it jammed is because there's many more supers and titans in range of our stuff, right?
Yeah.
And you're not as sloppy most of the time, right? So I mean, someone's
debatable.
Some dudes just should be gating around his hell or something and get caught. And it's really nice to have the jammer online. Then, not.
So Robert Catrix, thanks for the walking wall map. There's a visual of the Keepstar network that Test has there.
I mean, the only other thing other than the big difference between something like Esoteria and like East Edder is that there's one gate that goes right into the middle of it. You can take one gate from Legacy Space and be in the middle of our space, right?
Yeah, but that East Teniferous space, like if we actually staged where we could take advantage of that, it would be... we wouldn't have any ability to cover the rest of our space. So, like, we're three jumps away from it, and we've had some situations where we quickly form, take the jump gate to RU, take the three gates over to 77S, and try and jump on stuff. But you guys, by the time we do it, you guys are usually form two, and it's hit or miss whether that pays off or not.
Well, you could jump bridge to an anti-flex and use an anti-flex, but it's very dangerous to have that gate there, right? It's,
yeah. No, it definitely
that's
is.
Where the, that's where the Komodo died, right? That's where we had those two titans. That's the Komodo died. That's a Komodo prime example of where we could just feed, right? Where someone neither side is prepared, but
how we didn't lose our entire Titan fleet there still boggles my mind.
They just jump out, right?
So,
we could have lost a lot more there. You could have lost a lot more there, but it's just there's no 46 DP 77S and Esoteria, right? I mean,
well, I will say to your point there, despite the fact that we've been talking about a lot the meta and how defensive it is, it's a weird place because I don't think a lot of people realize how quickly things can go south for a defending alliance, especially when supers and titans are such a big part of defending your space. So you can have a situation like in 77S with the Komodo where that was just a random fleet, and then out of nowhere, it was a Titan battle, and it had it gone a certain way. You know, if Fraternity loses a majority of their Titans, or we lose a majority of our Titans, there's basically nothing we could do to defend anymore, and vice versa.
Just say it's not the U.S. time zone. It's still time zone tanking, right?
Yeah, but it's like in the North. Once you've got a Titan advantage, you're just slowly bleeding through Keepstars. But even then, like
if you're willing to put it on the line, yeah, because you can still bleed, Titans, especially with the new facts.
With the new mechanics, it's different. Yeah, the new mechanics with the facts, which I'm still curious to see how that'll play out. But it's definitely different. Of course, the problem with those mechanics is you have to hit a certain critical mass for it to even mean anything. So, you know, like all they really did is basically said the next UALX or X-47 will feature more Titan losses than it did. I don't think it's going to change a majority of the battles.
Even on mid scale, though, it can change a lot.
We'll see. I mean, if someone can get 200 to 300 dreads in on an unsuspecting enemy, then sure.
Yeah.
And then manage to not get them bosun.
But I mean, that would have happened before the mechanics. So you can sneak 200 yeah. dreads up on somebody. It's that's a tricky shoot.
Yeah, it's I tried. It's I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm saying I'm not good at it. Clearly.
Well, this is clearly a super advanced show, and the people who can understand what these guys are talking about are probably few, but this is great for advanced players to listen to these two very experienced FCs talk about the mechanics and strategies and stuff like that. Suffice to say that warfare right now is very complex. It seems that there's a lot of things that make it very difficult to take over a lot of space quickly, including those Sino jammers, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the best, we were looking at this the other day, and I don't think a lot of people realize this, but the map is changing much less often than it used to. Even in a war that we had last summer, which was, you know, the biggest war we've had since World War B, very little ground actually changed hands. Goons went up there and killed 10 keep stars, but they didn't actually conquer any space other than fade. I mean, after all that war we had last year with all the southern and northern conflict and everything, and basically Teniferous changed hands and Fade changed hands, and that's it, really. GOTG retained all their space. The northern forces retained all of their space. Fraternity remained where they were. It got to the point to where both sides, both Goons and Test, would have rather signed a nip and leave their enemies where they are than keep going under the mechanics to keep grinding out more structures and solve. So it definitely is much more of a grind than it used to be, and that's made people's homelands much more stable. I mean, there's definitely a lot more less ground changing hands. I think that's just people adjusting to the meta over time. I know we've had Citadel mechanics for 2 to 3 years, and there's been a lot of changing hands. Drone Lands lost all their space to skill you and FCON and Triumvirate and things like that. But I think now that the sides are solidifying more, and, you know, bad alliances like Triumvirate don't own Sov anymore, and there's mostly just good actors there, it's definitely becoming more stable.
Well, I think part of that is that people are getting better at managing momentum, and people don't just have one keep star anymore, right? So if they lose 10 keep stars, they still have 5 more, right? So you don't have to have your all in, this is it, guys, this is your final stand moment anymore. It's gone so far away from that. People can just keep going back and back and back and back instead of and just wait for people to tire out. You don't have to have a final stand anymore.
Which, honestly, it's where I wanted the game to go. One of my biggest complaints from 5 to 6 years ago, and although it seems to be kind of coming back to that in some way, but it's hard for people to remember that back during the Halloween War, we were complaining that it was taking about, the entire game was being run by about 6 to 8 FCs. Like, you could count all the FCs from both sides of N3 and CFC on essentially your two hands.
Was at least one of those?
No, sorry.
I have my feet up by then. Don't worry.
But yeah, it seemed like because of the way the mechanics were with no jump fatigue and any super fleet could be anywhere at any time, that there was just too high a stakes too often. And you could lose everything at any moment, and it was just making the whole game harder for the quote-unquote content creators that Siegel used to talk about. And so I've always kind of wanted the game to be more slow and stable, and there'd be less changing of Sov and less critical battles happening, you know, fewer critical battles that happen once a year, maybe once every 2 years. But that being said, it's hard to balance that as well. So I'm interested in there being more stable battle lines and more stable home regions and slow, grindy wars that are lower stakes. But I don't know if we're there yet.
The world's the easiest to recover from, right? With the whirlpools and the way everything is. It's easier. Before, if you lost like everything in the Halloween War, man, you'd be running around looking for some stuff to reprocess for ore to put in your CSAs. You can't just make it all in one Sotio or three Sotios and have everyone mining, right?
As far as like Warkles and the whole Citadel, like those kind of changes, I'm not sure how I feel about that in relation.
Yeah, but you couldn't recover. You just could not. Like, even if you had all the money in the world, you couldn't do it because there just wasn't ore to make your stuff and you didn't have the facilities, right? It's different now because it's easier to recover industrially, you know?
Yeah, I mean, NCMPL did recover pretty quickly after the Halloween War. Of course, Goons gave them that opportunity. They didn't, but...
I mean, the reason we did it is because we had so many inactive dudes on Titans who were just like, hey, let me grab your inactive Titans.
Whenever we build enough, we'll
give them back. Like it was like a two-month sort of lag for that. But I think the Elo's point, I think he hit the nail on the head. Alliances these days, there are fewer terribly run alliances than there were a few years ago, because there used to be in EVE so many like really bad alliances that you could beat up on, and then they just fall over under the smallest amount of pressure. They just implode. It's not like you would kill them. They would just implode and kill themselves. And now EVE has gone to the point where people who run alliances, so many people have Y-dotted into one another that the alliances are all quite strong and they don't get pushed over nearly as much.
Y-dot being
absorbing into a stronger alliance.
Yeah, I mean, this has been the way of EVE for a while now. This has always been the interesting thing. And I've talked about this a lot with fleet commanding and how it's much harder to become a fleet commander, a good one, these days than it was back when I was learning in like 2008. It used to be that back in, you know, 2006, 2007, basically before 2010, there were a lot of really kitchen sink fleets running around with bad FCs, and you know, obviously myself included. And it was just so much easier to get battles and not get completely wiped out. Like, even if you lost a battle back before logistic ships became a popular thing, you were still getting kills, and you would get more battles more often, and it just was easier to learn how to FC. These days, you take an FC, you give him a hack fleet with, 80 Munins in it, and if he doesn't understand what's going on, he may not score a single kill, and he'll lose like 60 Munins, and it's 50 billion ISK, and it's a huge loss. And that kind of stuff never used to happen for like learning FCs. It's just these days you go from basically running tiny little roaming gangs that are going after ratters to strategic fleets that are 100-150 and could easily get completely wiped out with no success whatsoever. And there's very little middle ground like there used to be. There used to be a lot of small roaming, and that's just the same thing. That's development over time. Those kind of people have kind of been they've evolved out of the gene pool, basically, for lack of a better term. They're just not there anymore.
That's part of the momentum, though, still, right? Because the people above you in your alliance aren't going to want Joe Blow to take 50 hacks and feed them, because he knows that that's going to make people upset, right? So it's all the momentum and all this, you know, no final stand. You just have to manage it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a mentality thing for sure, I'd say. Oh, yeah. Because, like, who cares if you lose 50 Munins? Like, you can wrap that up in, what, like, 4 delve minutes, I think? That's like a technical... You can just get that back real fast. Like, who cares? But it's literally the momentum and the, oh, he's going to call me bad because I lost a ship type of mentality.
Which is, so as far as adjusting to the new meta, this is something we've had a conversation with and among a few FCs at test. Is if a group, so like you said, Elise, you can rat for 50 Munins up at 4 delve minutes. It's really not that big of a deal. It's the loss of 50 Munins that people, you know, kind of cringe at. If there was a group, though, that could sell their member base on this kind of attrition, Stalingrad-type warfare and was willing to just put their economic machine into it, they could probably make some progress in this new meta. If you were willing to throw away, and this has been done a couple times, like when Horde and XIX and Test killed the Triumvirate and Keepstar by just throwing 500 Typhoons at it. You know, if you're willing to just kind of fight a grindy attrition warfare, if you could sell your members on that, just being like, hey guys, you're going to lose 5 ships, but that 6th ship you get in, that's going to be the one that wins us the battle. if you can do that, then, you know, maybe you can fight wars a little differently than we have in the past and actually do it in this meta.
Yeah, like I think that's definitely the way for the future.
The old days, you better have 10 Drakes in your hangar. You better have 10 Sniper Apox in your hangar, and you better just reshift and keep coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. That's the future, right? It's someone who doesn't care about losing as long as they just can keep, like, as long as they can set the internal narrative, like, hey, you might lose ships, but you're going to win overall, and it's going to be fun. Like, there are so many alliances that used to be like, hey, we undock, we have fun, we don't care about the kill boards, blah, blah, blah. And that used to be like, oh, let's just go have fun and have a good time. It used to be only, like, AAA that really cared about kill board stats, right? Like, they were literally the only alliance in EVE that cared. And then it kind of, like, it became a bit of a meme to care about your kill board, and then people unironically started killing about, like, caring about their stats, even though it makes no sense.
Well, no one wants to sit there and get their ass kicked. I mean, like, so to speak to the opposite point, if you're a line member in a Munin fleet and you're fighting an enemy Munin fleet, and it's very clear that every target you call gets saved and you're not killing anybody and your FC's like, all right, everyone run away. This is in there. Everyone's pissed off and you're losing. That does get frustrating after a while. No one, like, that was the one thing from the old Brave Newbies days that I never really understood the mentality. They're like, win, lose, you know, we're just losing pixels. It's fun. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I'd rather play Counter-Strike or something than just get my ass kicked all day.
Before you and Vili, that was test as well. That was literally the test mentality. Yeah. And before before the Mitanni, but before Mr. V, really, in Goons, their mentality was, Our ships cost more than your ammo. We don't give a shit. We're just going to keep zerging into you. Like, that was their whole thing.
Yeah, clog their cannons with our bodies.
Yeah.
And more recently in the perimeter trade wars, right? Like, it was very much about...
Oh, fuck. Those high-sec battles were pure cancer.
Keep going, dude.
I think I lost one of those battles just out of pure boredom. I was just sitting there, like, broadcasting targets, and I was like, this is the lamest content I've ever gotten. And I just, like, started doing it slow.
Yeah. I watched, like, exactly one of those fights, and it was just a Ferox fleet warped to another Ferox with a zero, and they just sat there for, like, 3.5 hours in 10% tie-dye shooting a Ferox.
It was the first big fight that we had that I actually saw PGL hand off to Vili, and he left.
Well, you guys are talking about the schools of thought of, like, you fight in this game, you group up, you find good people that you can rely on, you work together, you fight to win objectives and to dominate space.
Where are these good people you can rely on? Do you have any?
Yeah. Everyone in my corp has Stockholm syndrome. So
from you or from me?
That works for every alliance, though. Everyone, to an extent, I think everyone has a little bit of Stockholm syndrome.
Well, Elo, I heard originally, like way back in Dot Bros days, that there was a lot, two or three guys that you really relied on to help you set things up.
That's the true in any case. I mean, yeah. If you didn't have the support team, then it would just be some washed up dinosaur FC just feeding. It's all about how people help you prepare and the people during the fleet that help you do stuff, right? Because you only do so much, right? It's like you can do everything.
I rely on a lot of people. I don't even like to run more than one account these days, which is, I know, sacrilege among the FC group. We talk about it in No Leaks a lot, but...
I'm kicked in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you need... I don't see how you get FC without three accounts.
He just
I trust my scouts, and if they screw up, then I don't take any of the blame. It's actually not that bad.
Yeah.
Real quick, we know about the breaking news corp theft from Doom Chinchilla's corp. We're not going to cover it. We don't know any facts, but we'll cover it later on this week. So don't ask any more about that. I do want to say, Elo, who were some of the guys that you relied on in your history?
Like way back? I mean, it was Ipsimus, Muhaden,
M3. Oh, Jesus.
It was like, all the old guard. Like everyone, almost everybody who went to Nox when we had our big split off was doing some sort of help with the FC team, right?
Yeah.
And even now.
Matterall, do you understand? Are you a sports guy? Do you know coaching trees? Have you heard that concept from the NFL or college football?
I know it from mathematicians, but yeah.
Yeah, so I would say that the X Black Legion and X Nulli coaching trees are pretty interesting as far as who the support guys were back in the day.
Who's Bill Parcells between you and him?
Little known fact, Elo Knight and Origin was in Nulli Segunda for about a week. Right?
I was in test as well, actually. Funny you mentioned that. I was in test until I got kicked.
I don't think you got kicked. I think you left.
I'm pretty sure you got kicked.
I don't know.
From test, not Nulli. You left Nulli, right, Elo?
We got asked to leave Nulli.
That is...
It didn't kick. We got asked to leave. No. It's like you're too loud in a store. They just ask you to leave. Kick you out. They just ask you to leave.
I think we mutually agreed that it wasn't going to work.
The actual term was cultural differences.
Yes.
Yes. Cultural differences.
Nulli was a wild alliance.
It was a good time, though. We had a lot of fun while we were there. I mean, I've had a lot of fun working with ProGod in any capacity we've done over the... Over the years,
it's been it's been a while. We've been on the same side and on the opposite side so many times now. It's
got to balance it out a little bit, right?
Less balance lately, but yeah, sure.
I don't know. You're on the other side. I'm on this side. Not that heavy.
One other interesting fact. One of the guys that was in Black Legion with Elo, Muhadin. I think he was the architect of the first Keepstar that was built inside of Rage for Hard Knox.
Yeah, he was a very smart man.
So it's interesting how all these things are related.
Yeah, everyone in the FC team knows each other and does all these cool things and tries all these different plans, right? So you can only be so hostile to each other, except for us, you know, some people we hate, I'm sure. I won't name anyone, but. So weird culture.
Shoot, I was going to go back to Naros, but he looks like he had to leave. Sorry about that. Do you think that this excursion, the skirmishing that's happening, because it looks like a lot of skirmishing test is going into fraternity space and putting up some structures and doing stuff like that. Is this going to grow into a wider war with like Skill U getting involved and now? People from Serenity. Sorry, is it Serenity?
Yes.
Yeah, Serenity.
Yeah, Serenity. PIBC. I think now settling Omist. Is it going to grow as a theater of activity? I mean,
for us, we're just fighting a completely defensive war, so that's not our choice if it does, right? I mean, Skill Yourself moved away from us, and a lot of the timers aren't happening in the time zone, anyways. But it's completely up to the aggressors, right? It's not something we can do to keep them wherever we want them, right? It's defensive war. You move where you have to.
I think for us, you know, adding PIBC and OMIS definitely gives us an added defensive buffer against the time zone, which is one of our major concerns about having such a large off-time zone alliance on our border. It depends on a lot of things. Like, for instance, one of the tactics we could use to actually break through these Sino jammers and, you know, make some progress is just to say, fuck it, and jump our entire Super and Titan fleet through gates one at a time. But we're Shield Super Titan fleet, and there's really no reason to do that until Shield Slaves are, like, fully in the game and everyone has Shield Slaves. So, you know, like, if we're not willing to do that for a couple months and it might stagnate for a little while, it's really got to see how it plays out.
Yeah, it's also very dangerous to do.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying we would do it. I'm just saying it's an option.
Yeah, you'd have to be fully committed to it, basically, right?
Yeah.
And some alliances, you know, these days, it's not like the old days where everyone's coughing into a super. Some people are flying that Titan on their mains or one of their accounts or whatever, right? So if you move your super fleet into hostile space onto a Fortizar for a week or two, then that guy isn't riding. How is he going to pay for his plexes and stuff, right? How is he running Warpools?
So I would say that I think that's why CCP kind of ignored a lot of the people's criticism of the new Sino Jammers. Is they assumed that if, you know, anyone really wanted to break a Sino Jammer, they'd just jump their whole cap fleet through a gate. I don't think they realize, and I don't think a lot of other people realize, just how risky it is to do that. Like, it's technically feasible. But I mean, you're basically gambling your entire alliance's livelihood on some really shaky tactical ground that you can lose. Like, if you lose the ability to control the other side of the gate at any point during that fight, then you can't reinforce yourself anymore. And, you know, that's assuming that you don't have any supers or titans that bump off the gate when you warp to it. There's a bunch of other shit that could go down. It's extremely risky to do it. And, you know, it like Elo said earlier, there's no single point that's worth going all in for anymore. Everyone's got 10, 15 keep stars. You know, space is pretty interchangeable. So why would you risk everything on one fight? It's not necessarily going to happen. So,
right. Yeah. Can you tell us more about this PIBC, these Chinese players coming? And is it really going to happen, or is it still talking right now?
They are doing it, and they have some of the best subcap FCs. In the game. I mean, I would consider the game being both servers. Some of the people mm-hmm. that are coming over are extremely good FCs. And I think it'll show, maybe not now, but give it 2 months and you'll see 2-3 months when they start to skilled up by injectors.
How do you know them?
I used to play on Serenity, goof.
What?
What?
I played on Serenity for like 3 years.
It was super trendy for people to play on Serenity because they had no idea what to do for the longest time. They would fly Eve from like 5 years before.
Yeah, they were really.
I remember when freaking Scrap Heap first figured out how to get on Serenity, and they went over there like 6 or 7 years ago, and they made that ridiculous corporation.
Yeah, but I don't know. It was much crying old experts. I think.
The ticker was West.
Yeah.
It was really good. Rooks and Kings like never came back. They just stayed there.
I played on Serenity quite a bit and did some stuff and worked with them there and worked with some of the Chinese people here. And that was kind of the start of all this, me and Norris being friends and stuff. It's come a long way.
Again, you were saying you went there to kind of play because they were playing an older version of Eve?
No, it was just something different, right? It was just a change of pace when you're a little bit bored or it was like, you know, the summertime or something. Because, you know, summertime doesn't really affect the player count in China, right? Like, they don't really go on crazy long holidays and stuff like that like people do in Europe and America, right? So the player count didn't really drop. So you'd have a slow summer here, you could just go play on Serenity. And you'd have a group you'd play with there, and it would be fun. You could test things and still have fun, right? And it was very cheap. It was like $2 or $3 or something to subscribe.
So some of their great FCs are coming to
That's some of the best FCs I've seen in the game. I mean, they're not all really good. They just have a couple few really, really, really good people, right?
Right.
Sounds a lot like Tranquility to me.
Yeah. It's exactly the same, but it's different because they're all in the same time zone, right? It would be much more impactful if, say, all the really good FCs on Tranquility all played in the same time zone, right?
So this is what I never really asked, and I meant to ask it when I was talking the other day. Since they're all in the same time zone, was everyone just time zone tanking each other, like setting their timers to the complete off other time zone? Or
if you're losing sometimes, but most of the time it would be just in prime time, dude. So that's the prime time, let it go, because nobody wants to be on the computer all the time unless they have to, right? There's a couple times where they set the timers and did stuff just before their downtime. That's how they had that 23-hour fight. Everyone jumped in, downtime hit, and everybody logged back in.
Yeah.
So that's how they had a 23-hour Titan fight, right?
I saw that. That was before. That was bigger than ours before.
It was right after BR5, yeah. It was like 2 weeks later or something. But
That was funny. We should go back to that because we had this gigantic fight that was, you know, historic, and it got played on CNN and all kinds of publications. It was BTAC-R. And then a week later, China's server had an even bigger fight, which is pretty funny.
But no, it's they have an entirely different way of playing and a different view of stuff, right? It's you've been fighting Fraternity for what, like 2 years, bro. You know, it's different to fight like a Chinese alliance than it is to fight an English alliance. That's just the mentality of it, right? No fire just sits for like 3 hours with a zealot or something, camping oracles, and he just never catches anything. He'll come back the next day and do the same thing over and over again. It's much more like my playstyle, right? Well, they don't mind just sitting there and doing something else while they're sitting in fleet for an hour. Let's
say that they form ridiculously early for every timer, like 90 minutes before every timer, and just sit in station for an hour waiting to undock. So, yeah, that is different.
Yeah. It's a lot of different mentalities, a lot of things that can be improved on, right? A lot of, like, you know, dock up your VNI 2 hours before the timer and come to the same system. Don't join the fleet in your VNI, finish your haven, and then come.
That's not unique to the Chinese alliance, let me tell you.
I had a guy the other day in my fleet. He was in a rattlesnake, and I asked him why he was in a rattlesnake. He said he was doing a 10 of 10. I said, why are you in the fleet? Then he said he's coming, but he just got to finish the 10 of 10, and he'll be about 15, 20 minutes.
I was like, That happens in our fleets too.
Yeah, it's just like a weird mentality. Why would you join the fleet if you're still riding? You don't have an intention of stopping, right? Like, if you're coming, I get it, but if you're just going to finish what you're doing and then come, a bit odd.
I name and shame. I open up fleet comp and I just call them out. You know,
I do that as well. Yeah.
But that's an example of what player, Western or Eastern player?
This is just like the average player, right?
But I mean,
that happens so much. If I form a fleet, then we'll have like 50 VNIs and 10 munins for 15 minutes until everyone gets back and swap. It's just weird. Everyone's all spread out doing things.
Dude, you don't want them to cramp their style. They got to finish that haven.
The VNI ticks, yeah.
I don't understand the VNI thing. Like, there are better ways to make money.
I don't know. I used to run like 10 VNIs while I was at work for like 10 hours a day.
Oh my god. Pro God, how do you make money?
Streaming.
Open up Corp Wallet, take his.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Take a salary, right?
You borrow.
Well, I don't have time to make ISK in this game. I barely have time to FC in this game.
It's a lot of time invested to play at like a really high level.
Oh yeah, I actually did have a money making method there for a little while where I'd auction myself off to various corps and test. Whoever paid me the most got to have me in their corp for a month.
I remember
I was gonna say, here's what you do. Like, here's like the dirty trick. You come up with a new doctrine. You seed it first.
Oh yeah, I've done that before.
And then you're like, yo, dude, we're doing this fleet like tomorrow. Just buy all the ships now, and then you're just rich.
Then you go to the beach and don't run the fleet.
Yeah,
I remember Pro Guide at one point in Nelly. You're like, I need an assistant. I need somebody to like do all the paperwork.
Oh, I did pay an assistant 4 billion ISK a month for a little while. He moved all of my ships around and fitted all my ships and made sure everything was ready to go. And he wrote my forum post for a little while. Yeah, that was a good time.
You couldn't find a girl to do it? You had a dude to do it?
It's like a caddy.
I didn't ask.
I'll be your assistant. Yeah. I'll fit your ships for you.
I might be down for that because I've got our last four or five staging systems. I haven't even moved my ships. They're still there.
Yeah, you're just going to go back to those systems at some point.
Eventually, anyway. I still haven't lost a monitor yet, by the way. I've been down here since the start of the war. I haven't lost a single monitor yet, I don't think.
Monitor is a new FC ship, right?
Yeah.
It's better if we don't tackle you, stay on the field and keep losing ships. I'm joking.
Right. It's 2 years.
That's really mean. I won't say anything.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. I mean, EVE is such a confusing game, and it's hard to explain it to people sometimes. And you can explain it at different levels, right? There's like the elementary level, the high school level, the university level. You know what I mean? There's all different levels, and
there's a post-doctorate level.
Yeah, some people get it, and some people just don't get it, right? They'll just always be at the same thing.
Well, what's to get? What is it?
There's so many just little nuances and different game mechanics and different ways people think and getting to know how everything works. It's just every little bit can give you a slight advantage. And if you just capitalize them, then you can kill some eagles.
Yeah, I think at a certain point, and I'm not qualified to really talk about it, but at your guys' level, there must be some beauty in the details.
Yeah, I don't want to, like... I don't have EVE and Steam, thank God, but I'd imagine I've put enough hours into it to be expert level. And I think if you do anything that long, you get really good at it. I wouldn't say it's super special.
As long as you're putting effort into it, you know, there's people that just do something every day and they're still complete shit at it. As long as you put effort into trying to learn, there's a big difference, right? There's a big difference in putting in your time and trying to learn and be better.
I was like, the biggest satisfaction for me was always when like a plan actually came together and wasn't just a complete dog shit failure.
Oh yeah, that's
like that's always like the best feeling. Like, well, like who cares how many ships you kill? But like if the plan worked and you get to do your thing the way you wanted it, it feels so good, man.
There's a sound clip of
getting a nifty fleet concept to work is pretty dope. Oh, what is
there's that sound clip of me MGDing your fleet? Or it's probably banned from Twitch. Probably if you played it, you get banned from Twitch. Probably it was very explicit.
Yeah, fuck that shit.
Is that where it happened like 3 times in a row?
No. This was this is dumb. This isn't even worth talking about.
It was really good for me and not so good for him, and it was just very lucky on my part. But I just keyed up the entire time yelling and being very explicit about how good I felt.
Yeah. I've done that before with some shit. It's a good time.
Yeah.
Okay, so from your guys' perspective, what is an example of a good fleet member versus a bad fleet member?
One that follows orders? Like what?
It's honestly for me, if somebody can anchor and then de-lock the target and then hit their ADC properly, that's pretty good. It's like three, four buttons is pretty good.
It's not that hard.
It's not actually that hard, but people fuck it up. So I usually have been telling my fleets to just jettison cans in the end dock and just practice approaching it after the fleets as well. Things like that. Just like weird things like that.
Honestly, like if I see someone who's not using their mouse to click on everything and is actually using their hotkeys, that's a good start. You know, then we can, if they're right clicking on their watch list, if they're doing the dance on their watch list so that they approach or orbit as soon as they come out of warp, that's a good sign. You know, some good things.
Yeah, there's one of the signs I thought was interesting. This is kind of related. Was when I was in Nully, people would be like, fly to 10K off the Titan or warp to it, and then slow boat to the Titan so that you don't bump it out of its safety area.
I saw that trackball, at least.
Yeah. And later on, when I joined NC, they're like, warp to the Titan. And I thought, well, aren't you supposed to warp near the Titan and then slow boat to it? And they're like, we don't slow boat to the Titan in NC. And so that kind of told me it was a different degree of like what people fear, what the group fears.
Yeah, everyone's got their little nuances that they've developed.
Yeah,
but I'm all about Dictor pilots who are like big brain Dictor pilots. Like if you're a big brain Dictor pilot, you just make the fleet work.
That's true. We actually had a Dictor pilot tackle you, Progad, in that one fleet. I sent him 5 bill, and he sent me back 4.5 bill, saying that he would feel dishonest taking it all. I was just yelling at him on comms, and he just barely got you. Nothing else, just you. It was very weird that he sent me back like 4.5 bill.
Very at least, big. You said big brain Dictor pilots, which actually sounds kind of dirty now that I think about it. But if Dictor pilot is somebody who traps the enemy fleet for you as an FC, so what's a big brain Dictor pilot like?
I mean, it's someone who can kind of like get a sense for how the fleet is going. So you don't want to like just zerg in and put your bubble up while the two sides are like just like fighting and throwing blows, because they're not going to warp off anyway. You got to kind of predict what the bad guy is going to do and just sit up at your perch cloak so you don't feed yourself. And then
Dictor pilot could warp to a wreck without me having to tell them. Oh my God.
Yeah. If he can get the bubble up as like the bad guys are saying, hey, we should probably leave now. Like you can sense when the bad guys want to run. And if you can like get there and bubble up as they're deciding if they want to run or not, that's that big brain maneuver.
Yep. No point in bubbling them when they want it. They think they're winning and they're fighting you. You're just wasting your Dictor. Just wait till they start running.
Are bubbles still used in a defensive way against being snatched away?
A little bit, yeah. I think so. It really depends on how, right? Because the bubble is really just to stop people from landing at zero. People still try to boost you and stuff. But
yeah, I think most people just use like hick bubbles now for like anchoring type things. But I think maybe I'm like really rusty. I don't think bombing is that huge anymore. It used to be that the bombing was like so massive in the meta that you have to bubble around you before you warp, just so nobody could total hell death you with bombs.
Well, the strategic bubbles helped a lot with that as well, right? They last a lot longer and they're smaller radius. So. It's not really new, but nobody ever uses it. The surgical probe or whatever instead of the warp sub probe. It's very nice.
Those
you just have to rip out your skills to get hick one, because then the bubble's too small.
Surgical probes are my idea.
Wouldn't they be called ProGod probes?
So how much work do you guys do individually for your fleet? Because I've heard that Elo will have like four or five accounts that he's using to, you know, to track things.
Right now in this war, I've been using on average like 7, and at the most like 13.
I used to use 4 or 5 accounts. I only use 1 now.
Isn't that what what's the Gig X was famous for? He didn't like probing or having alt, so he would just play one
probing.
I still probe, but
I have a camper PC. Like I have like a one of the servers, like kind of like a Marshy has, and it's in like in pieces of my room. I got to put it together, then I can run a lot more. But
what is that?
It's just like a computer to run like 50 accounts on. You know, I just put it in my closet kind of thing. But I haven't done it yet because I'm lazy. It's just
I don't know if that's lazy.
It's pretty lazy. I don't really get with computers, so it's pretty lazy. You want to put it together?
I used to run like all my own Lynx and Titans and Sinos and stuff, but you know, that takes an extra 2 or 3 hours before every fleet, and I'll do it for like really important stuff, but at times I can't do it. Like it
depends on how invested you feel.
It gets really old after a while. It's just not fun.
Yeah, it's really hard to not have your own like in Sino, because you have to like have it exactly where you want it. And you know that ship's going to die, so you also have to have eyes on the system, too. So I don't know how people do it with, like, under 4.
Maybe my insignos aren't always exactly where I want it, but, you know, we get in system regardless. I think it's more fun that way.
That's true. It's like
relying on other people has definitely helped develop some of our FCs, I think. I've always included a lot of people in our channel command, for better or for worse, maybe. But, you know, I have other people running logistics, Lynx, Sinos, Scouts, etc. We get a lot of people involved. Yeah, maybe they hate me for it because I'm constantly yelling at them for updates on enemy intel and where the Sinos are and all that. But I think it's easier to just include people than... try and run 5 or 6 accounts.
Because some FC might be trying to run something differently. He sees how you run it and changes his ways to the not horrible way, right?
I mean, the reason I started FCing is because like Shadoo made me like be a backup anchor for a while, and then he'd like let me be the anchor, and then eventually I was like, oh, so this is how you're supposed to do it. So like definitely trusting people really does help to, as ProGod was saying, to like build up the next generation of FCs. He'd also yell at me all the time, though. So I mean,
well, he yelled at everyone.
Let's see. Yeah. So you worked with Shadoo. ProGod came up working with Makalu, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Elo came.
No, Makalu and I learned together. Makalu and I FC'd the same alliance. We were both in Providence. We both fought the Providence War against AAA in 2009. He was the PAX and FC. I was the LFA FC. And then he ended up going to AAA, and I formed Nully. And then it was because Makalu and knew me that Nully got involved at AAA. But I would say... Go ahead.
I didn't know he was in Paxson. That's interesting.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, he was at Paxson, and then he joined LFA. But he was in Paxson for a while. Along with Kateri and a couple others. I'm trying to think. So, like, the FCs I learned from would be, like, Angelonico, Armadus Baldwin, just, like, some real old farts. Then learn from him directly, but I know you'll remember this one at least. I read a lot of his DRs and learned stuff. Mr. Suffering.
Mr. Suffering was dope. I love that guy. He was a crack with him for his last stick. Dinton Eve. He was really, really fun. He was a dude who loved to test out traps. That was his main thing.
Yeah, and just to show people how long the Eve is dying, stuff has been going on. I remember when Mr. Suffering was quitting Eve and basically saying the version of Eve is not Eve and all that stuff. It was on scrap heap. So,
I think we're having back to sound difficulties there.
Well, am I disconnected still?
You should be back. Are you able to hear?
Yeah, Yeah, I can hear you. I just don't know.
There's one more I forgot that I learned it's a lot bad. From that's worth mm-hmm. mentioning, and that's Super Twinkie. As I learned
oh my god, Super Twinkie.
Pretty good, yeah.
Describe Super Twinkie.
Sociopath.
Super Twinkie makes all of us raging FCs look like really nice people.
Yeah, he's a nice guy, though. He
just got oh, he's a great guy, up. Yeah.
He just got really riled up.
And my favorite was he was always telling random pilots, like, you know, some Scepter would not have a pink spot, and he'd just go on this, like, 30-second rant, like, you need to sort your entire life out, like, completely failing at everything in your life right now, just for, like fucking up a sign-up.
That one guy forgot ammo, and he just said, just come anchor on me and pretend you have ammo or something. Like, I was like, what do you want me to do? Like, no ammo? That's yeah, some very good ones, yeah.
Elo, you were... support staff in Atlas way back then. Who did you learn from?
I learned from random Intrepid Crossing and Ethereum Dawn people, and then from Bobby Atlas, basically, and the people in Atlas. That's basically it, I guess. And then I started going off my own and doing my own things.
Well, how old were you?
When I was in Atlas, I think I was like 14 or 15. I think.
When you formed Black Legion, how old were you?
15 or 16, I think.
That's wild.
It's weird when you think about it. Like when like the current crop of FCs, when they first started, how young they were.
Yeah.
I remember like Billy's first ops, like way back when he was still in Goons. He would just like be super high energy as like a young, like 19, 20 year old.
Yeah. I remember, you know, like I was still in high school when I was fighting Elise for the first time. So,
Elise, when I haven't been on one of your fleets actually this entire time, but I've heard that you have really quiet and calm fleets.
Yeah, it's I have to like balance out the rage of everyone else in the alliance.
That's a lot of rage.
I've heard you rage before.
Yeah, I have raged before. There's like a video, there's an audio clip of me getting really mad. Because it took me like 9 hours to set up an op, and one dude just kept making mistakes. It was the same guy making mistake after mistake, and I just broke. It was like 3 weeks of people making mistakes and me trying to be like cool about it, and then it just all came to a head, and I just broke as a human.
Is that the one where you were at work?
Yeah, I was at work.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
I had my office door open because I was back then I was teaching like an entry level economics class, and it was like my office hours technically. So I had my door open, I had everything going, and like no one ever came in because it was entry level economics. No one has any questions about microeconomics. Yeah. And then just lost it. I just completely lost my mind for like 4 minutes, and then I apologized like 5 minutes after that. I felt bad.
Dude, that's how it happens, man. Like that whole two dictors thing that's the clip of me has been going around. Like that came from, it had been like 2 or 3 days of just getting blue balled. And so we decided, this is back when you could just like teleport all across Eve. So there was this, we were in Amincia and there was this fleet and fountain. So I put in all the effort. I moved all my Sinos. I got my Titans in order. And I bridged my fleet all the way from Amincia to Fountain. It took us like forever to get there. And there was like a bunch of fuck ups along the way. And then we finally bridged on them and we got dropped. And they were on grid for like 30 seconds. We bubbled them and they burned out of the bubbles. And I was like, get more bubbles. And then I realized there was no dictors and they got away. It took us like 4 hours to get there. And I just lost my mind.
Feels bad, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because I think now if people think about Pro God, they might think of raging Pro God. But all my experiences in your fleets were that you kind of had a certain rhythm to you that was really different than everybody else's.
I definitely used to be more chill. I probably should calm down a little bit. But I don't know. The stakes get higher. When you get better and you've been FCing longer, like I don't know, I want to win more. Maybe I knew less back then, so I didn't know what to get mad about.
I think it's half of it's excitement. People take that as anger, but half of it's just excitement, right? You're charged up,
yeah.
Your thing is working, and someone's like working against you actively, who's supposed to be on your side. You're just like, why are you doing this? You're so confused. It's high energy.
We've been hot dropped by Billy, by the way. He's jumped in the channel here.
Yeah, I just had to come in here and correct some fucking slanderous accusations by Elise here. He's been trying to, like, go after me for years now. It's like, he was like, oh, yeah, Billy was this young cat in Goons. I'd been FCing for, like, 5 or 6 years at this fucking point, okay? I was, like, in my late 20s. Like, I don't know what the hell you're doing. Like, I saw that presentation, like, years ago. Like, last year or year before, I was, like, epically triggered. And now he's doing it again just to try and get at me. So I had to fucking say something. I can't accept this slanderous accusation at all. I'm done.
Whoa, it's like WrestleMania in here.
Where's what's his name's wife, you know? And then,
like, the dude, look here. At Elise. Look at Elise. He can't even.
Wow.
Elise is going to pass that, dude.
Okay, somebody clip that and put that out there.
Yeah. Bad word this time. That's good. It's improving.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think the journal lesson is we as FCs can get fired up over things.
Yeah.
Case in point right there.
All right. Well, this has been a really cool show. We might as well wrap up with that exciting ending. And I want to thank Elo for coming by with Pro God and Naros, who was here earlier. Thanks, guys. And after the show, we always jump into the public channel and you guys can hang out and talk with the guys that were on the show if they can stick around. I want to thank everybody and also especially our sponsor today, eve-mogul.com. Check them out. Get on their Discord. Yeah. So is there anything else that you guys need to, is there anything you can't drop? Something you have to
put out? Tuesday is a mass test on the Singularity, testing the 64-bit client. You guys should help out testing. Last time it actually worked pretty good until the client used like 40 gigs of RAM. But yeah, you should check that out on Tuesday. It's kind of an important thing to do.
Great. Also, St. Petersburg just happened. They made an announcement of the new expansion that's coming out. It's called Invasion, and it's about Triglavians invading known space. So look out for that. That's also the name of the world tour that CCP is on. Next stop is going to be Eve Down Under. So look out for that in a week or two.
So I think the chances that those new Triglavian hacks are going to be overpowered or one-to-one.
Yeah. Oh, they're 100% broken. Like,
yeah, there's no way those things will be overpowered.
It's like a new league skin, dude. Gotta get it real good. New league hero.
And also keep logging in for the 16 days. A million skill points up for grabs.
Oh, I already got to do that. I already screwed it up on one of my accounts.
I haven't logged in in like days.
Make sure you log in and vote for me for CSM.
So today, if you start logging in today and you do it every day, then you'll still get all of it. Because you
can
it's 2 days.
It's 20 days.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yeah. You're running for CSM, Elo?
Yep.
Elo's one of the few FCs that shares all of my opinions on capital, so I'm definitely voting.
Yeah. You could help get me on your ballot, yeah.
Let's make sure we get that out there. So CSM, the application window is now open, and Elo Knight, you're running for CSM.
Going to be the refreshing face, I guess. And if you're watching, don't vote for Sid Dragon. Thank you.
Who else, guys, anybody in here, who else is running for CSM that we should probably note?
I think Villy is. I'm not sure. I thought about it, but no. And
aren't you already on the CSM, Pro God?
Yeah, I had this brief moment where I was I should run for the CSM again so I can like be a voice against some of this shit. And then I remembered being on the CSM and I was like, wait, never mind.
Yeah, it's different now, dude. It's different now.
I know it is. I know it is. It was a good time. It was a good time. But
Billy would be a good CSM. He's got the temperament for it.
The people that have talked to me about who's running, it could make a really hilarious ticket if we all managed to make it there. It could be the most gong show.
I mean, if we could just pack the CSM with FCs for a change, it'd be interesting, but.
Isn't Aerith an FC? No.
Who's running alongside you, Elo, that you're talking about?
I'm not going to say anyone else unless they do their announcements, right?
You're right. Yeah.
Muddy the waters. Let's take away the surprise. I got a pretty good video I'm in the works of right now. So.
Oh, boy.
All right, cool. Yeah. Okay, again, thanks, everybody. Make sure you keep your eye out for the new expansion. It's actually coming out this month, And look out for CSM campaigning season we're going into. You're going to see a lot of stuff coming out of Talking in Stations. We're going to be interviewing a lot of candidates. If you are running for CSM and you want an interview, please contact Artemis Alboza, Talking in Stations Discord, for a 20 to 30 minute interview from one of our staff members. And that will do it for today's show. That's all the time that we have. Look out for this week as we gather up more news and come streaming through streams and stuff.
I have a thing.
Yes.
You should all be watching Nashville. It's a great TV show. Watch it.
That was going to be a Tranquility Trading Tower.
No, trade at Tranquility Trading Tower too.
Well, you can't say Nashville. That. No, you can't because it's a different sponsor.
Just the Nashville.
All right, everybody. Thanks very much, Elise, for hanging out with us. Naros, thanks for dropping in. Elo, Pro God, and Ron, thanks, guys. We will see you next time on Talking in Stations.